past weekend, we lost a former president of the NSS and somebody who's been on the podcast before, Tom Ray. He was a member of My Grotto. Back before COVID times when we would meet in person, he was at almost every meeting that I can remember. He was at the very first Grotto meeting I ever went to after I had done my first trip in Indiana's Wayne Cave and wasn't sure I ever wanted to go again because it's such a hard cave. Now I love that cave. And we went around the horn and our Grotto chair, Dean Wiseman at the time, said, "What, instead of talking about what caves you visited recently, I want to know your favorite cave." And everybody went around. And Tom Ray, this old dude with the long gray hair, said Wayne Cave. And then, as I later found out in this interview, he never caved with knee pads. And Wayne is one that I would never, ever do without knee pads. As you're about to hear, Tom Ray held every leadership position in the NSS, every single one, at the time anyway. And be sure to stick around for the whole interview at the very end. You will not believe who he was fraternity brothers with in college. You just won't. You'll know who he's talking about. And we're sorry he's gone, but he lived a good long life. He passed away on Saturday at the age of 88. And let's remember him now, Tom Ray. Tom, I got to admit, in doing my research on you, I was a little overwhelmed. I did a search on your name in the NSS members portal, and I got over 600 entries.
Yes, I'm not surprised. I've been around a long time in the NSS.
Well, you've held every NSS officer position at one time or another, right?
I have, and I'm the only person who has done that.
Are you really? Every officer position. You're the only one.
I'm the only one. Some of them I've been twice. I even was treasurer, and I don't like that job, but I was treasurer because I wanted to do them all.
Yeah. So one term is treasurer. And
well,
that was
I was
enough.
Three terms as treasurer.
Three terms.
Yeah.
So what's a term? 2 years? A year?
A year.
A year. Okay.
Yeah, the officers' terms are 1 year.
When were you the president?
In the early 80s.
Early 80s, NSS president.
I'm not exactly sure of the exact date, but it was in the early 80s.
You got a four-digit NSS number.
5683.
There it is. I had it ready, but I knew you'd beat me to the punch. And you're one of the founding members of my grotto, our grotto, the
no,
CIG.
I'm not.
You're not one of the founding members.
I'm not one of the founding members. When I joined the CIG, it was 7 years old.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. But you had mentioned at the last Grotto meeting, and maybe this was anecdotal from somebody else, that the meeting to decide whether or not to form a Grotto was formed in the very room where we have our Grotto meetings 50-plus years ago.
I knew that because very shortly after I joined the NSS and the CIG practically at the same time. And the NSS was having a contest about who could write the best history of their grotto.
Okay.
The grotto was 7 years old, so everything they had done was in one great big box, cardboard box. And I took that great big cardboard box, and I wrote the history of the CIG. And I won the prize.
Yeah, really? So you won.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it really wasn't much of a history, 7 years.
Yeah.
No, I don't think anybody could do it now because I'm sure all the records are spread for hither and yon.
So you're a CIG member. What other grottos you a member of?
I'm a member of the Michigan Interlakes Grotto.
Okay. And you attend their meetings? Try to?
Well, no.
Not really? That's a long drive. You drive.
Yes and no. Listen, the Michigan Interlakes Grotto and the Michigan Karst Conservancy actually owns 280 acres in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Ah.
And up until 2 years ago, guess what? I was the property manager. That's exactly what you want to be, the property manager of 280 acres, 550 miles from home.
You were up there almost every other weekend for a while, right?
I was up there once a month.
Yeah.
Actually, I had to go into the hospital for some serious work and I wasn't sure I'd make it, and so I resigned as property manager before I did that.
And this was...
Otherwise, I'd probably still be the property manager.
This was what, a year or so ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, almost, I remember almost that. 2 years ago.
Do you still go up there every once in a while?
I go up there every month.
You go up there, you still go up there.
We open the preserve in May. You know, it's cold up there.
Yeah.
And we close it in October. So from May to October, I go up there once a month.
And what do you do up there?
Fool around.
Just
we got, you know, there's 480 acres up, and it's got, and that 480 acres has the largest cave in Michigan,
which comes in at about what,
1,800 feet,
okay,
air filled, and then about a mile or so water filled.
Okay, so you've had divers go in there and figure that out.
We actually have. Yes. Yeah.
So the karst in Michigan is pretty much way north.
Well, there's a commercial cave just north of South Bend.
Oh, okay. it's Michigan.
It's 50 it's feet of cave, but they charge you 50 cents to see it. But from there north, yes, the karst is in the north.
And a lot of it is on Mackinac Island, right?
There is karst on Mackinac Island.
I guess let's back up and go to the genesis of your caving life. Your caving life started with a trip to Mammoth Cave when you were just a kid, right?
Well, yeah. I think I was 6 or 7 years old, and my mother took me to Mammoth Cave National Park just, you know, because everybody ought to see the national park, right?
Of course, yeah.
And I was absolutely fascinated. Absolutely.
You remember the trip you took? Remember where you went?
No, I don't. But what I did was, if I could get a big cardboard box, I put it on the floor sideways and put blankets over it and put the blankets over the dining room table so I could crawl in there. I made caves. I even remember taking everything out of one of my mother's kitchen cabinets and getting in there and closing the door. I mean, listen, I was infected. And I would ride my bicycle all over the place looking for caves. I lived in Henry County. There aren't any caves in Henry County, but I didn't know that. I didn't know anything. So I
got to find something.
Looking for caves. Yeah. When I got out of school, I got a job. I started working at Indiana Bell, and it was probably the smartest thing I ever did. But anyway.
You worked there for a long time.
All my life.
Yeah.
All my working life. I've been retired now from there for 24, 25 years.
But you were an engineer.
I was an engineer, yes. It went from a engineering company to a marketing company.
As so many do.
I retired.
Just the right time, seems like.
I think the handwriting was on the wall. It would be really disgusting to work for 34 years someplace and then get fired.
Yeah.
But the engineers were getting fired, and so I thought, I guess I'll go.
Well, okay, so when did you – so you're riding your bike around Henry County – And eventually you figure out that there's no caves there. So when do you find your way into the caving world?
When I went to work at Indiana Bell, one of the guys there talked me into being a scoutmaster.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I said, I'll do that. So I was a scoutmaster. And then I graduated to being an explorer advisor with the older boys. They wanted to go caving. Oh, great. So do I. Let's do it. So we did it with flashlights.
Where at?
All over southern Indiana.
Oh, okay.
Mostly Monroe County.
Various places.
The caves we could find by ourselves, if somebody would tell us. And anyway, there was a scout thing, you know, with all the boys were putting on a display of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And Bugs Armstrong was there.
Ah.
He saw me and he said, hey, you guys ought to get in the grotto. And I said, what's a grotto? And he told me what the grotto was. And by God, the next meeting I went and I joined the NSS and been in it ever since.
That was a CIG meeting.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Bugs Armstrong. The CIG meeting that I went to, yes.
Yeah.
It was in April or May of 1966.
Okay.
And I've been a member ever since. I'm a life member now.
And so from there, you've done a lot. I mean, where would you say, I mean, do you have any like caving accomplishments that you look back on? Like, you know, I was one of the first to survey this, or I discovered this one, or anything like that?
No, not really. I I don't know that I did anything in Indiana that was outstanding. One thing that I really did, I'm glad I did, I was in the third trip to go into Salamander.
Salamander. Third trip ever into
Salamander?
I was
in the third trip ever into Salamander.
So this was when the table was still up on and hadn't been destroyed. And
it's been totally vandalized now. And the third trip, it was absolutely beautiful, you know, and nothing had been hurt in there.
Wow. And that's a major cave. I mean, have you been in Salamander a lot?
Then I was, yes. I don't go back. Well, of course, I don't cave anymore. I can't walk anymore, but I quit going there after they vandalized it as badly as they did.
So, you know, would you say then, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, would you say you know Salamander really well?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
You've been through that. I've only heard of a theoretical through trip in the main entrance and then out some skeezy entrance elsewhere.
I don't fit.
Okay.
I tried that.
You
yes.
tried that. Aware of it.
I was with a group that did that,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't fit. I couldn't do it. So I sat there in that room where that crawlway starts and waited for the people to come back. I don't really think you can get out the other way. It goes into a cave, which is kind of a pit, and you can't, if you don't have the pit rigged, you can't get out.
Gotcha. Well, you're about like me. You're what, maybe 6'2", 6'3"? You're a tall
man. I was
man.
Then. I'm 6'1 now. I was 6'2 then.
Okay, so the length of your femur kind of hinders your ability to get
through. It was the size of my chest. I couldn't get through a squeeze.
Oh, is that what it was? It's that low of a squeeze.
Yeah, I'm a pretty big guy. I'm not little like a lot of more eager cavers are. But, yeah, I couldn't do that through trip.
Another one of your... I remember from a grotto meeting one time you saying that your favorite cave, and I don't know if this still holds true, but you said your favorite cave was Wayne.
Well, you know, everybody says, what's your favorite cave?
Yeah.
And I guess that depends on how I feel that day and where I am. There's a lot of beautiful caves in this country.
Yeah, it's hard to name one.
But for Monroe County, okay, yeah. Wayne's Cave, that's a great cave.
Well, and sporty, too. You can do just about anything in there.
There's a lot of cave there, yeah.
Yeah, it's the longest cave in the Garrison Chapel Valley, right?
I'm not sure that it is. It's
a long cave, 4 1/4 miles.
Yeah. Well, I had a really interesting experience there. Bill Tozer and I, it was a grotto trip. We went on a grotto trip. But Bill Tozer and I decided that we wanted to see the end of the cave.
Go all the way north?
All the way to the end of the cave.
Okay.
Actually, the end of the cave is just across the street from the entrance. but, of course, it's underground. You don't know where you are, but I know that's where it is. It's just over. There's a sinkhole over across the street from the entrance, and that's where the end of the cave is.
How intriguing.
But anyway, we took off, and a couple of kids followed us. And we said, you can't follow us. They said, we can go anywhere we want to do. I said, yeah, you can. You can go anywhere you want to go, but you're not following us. You're not on our trip. And we practically ran off and left them. You know, we knew how to move in a cave, and they didn't. So we were about 2/3 of the way to the end, and the kids said, oh, we can't go anymore. We're tired. And I said to Bill, I said, did you hear something? And he said, yeah, I heard somebody talking. I said, well, let's go. We got to hurry. So we ran off and left them. And
were they on this grotto trip or were they just in the cave?
They were on the grotto
day?
Trip.
Okay.
They were on the grotto trip.
And you just split off from the grotto trip.
But Bill and I wanted to go to the end of the cave, and we were practically running because we wanted to come out when the grotto trip came out, and they weren't going to go that far. So anyway, we went on and we got to the end of the cave, and we saw the end of the cave. And we turned around and we came back, and there they were sitting there.
just dead
they
tired.
Were lost.
They were lost.
They
were lost.
They were where the hell they were. I said, well, you kids have learned another lesson. When you go in a cave, no matter who you're with, keep track of where you went.
Yeah.
Because you may have to get yourself out.
Did you essentially then lead them out? Did they just follow you out?
Oh, they followed us out.
Yeah, okay.
We weren't moving so fast then. We were kind of worn out.
So. Well, it's a long way. Okay, so you went to what? What do they call it now? Camp 4?
Oh, it's beyond that. It's
way up
there. We were clear to the end.
Okay.
The thing breaks down into a bunch of fingers.
Yeah.
Little narrow fingers back there.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that. We didn't know that. We found that. But anyway, that was kind of interesting, those kids.
Well, that was back when Wayne Cave was Wayne Cave, and they hadn't I'm assuming this is before they had excavated the crawlway for that rescue in the 80s, right?
Yes, it was before that.
Still super tight through there toward the
end. They didn't really excavate that too much for that rescue, but they did have to knock some points off to get that. I was pulling the rope on that, bringing that litter out of
you
that,
were there.
That rescue.
You
yeah,
were there.
I was there.
Tom Solman's complete history of Wayne Cave in the IKC newsletter. I'm sure you saw that and looked through that. And I know you provided some quotes for that, including that anecdote right there. That was just an incredible work. A lot of work put into that.
Yes. Yeah, he did that. I'm not a writer. I'm an editor. I've published a lot of books. I mean, a lot of books. But I'm not a writer. I don't want to write a book.
You thought about it, though.
I thought about it. I wanted to write a story of my caving life. And I thought, man, that'd be a good book.
I thought I would read it.
But I couldn't write it. I didn't want to write it. I've been a copy editor for 35 years, but I'm not a writer.
You can read and say what's good and what's not, but
yes,
as far as
my grammar's better than almost anybody's, but I studied that, you know, to get it right.
Yeah. Any other good stories about your caving life in Indiana?
Oh, well, let's see. Yeah. Actually, you know, I'm not a pit caver. I don't like to do rope work too much.
But you've done plenty, I'm sure.
I went to all the pit caves in Indiana, but I didn't have never gone to one in Tennessee.
Never, not a single one in Tennessee.
Huh. They're too deep, too much for me. And I did Gory Hole once. Gory Hole's 154 feet.
Yeah, yeah.
I did that one time, just because I had to do it. It's an Indiana cave, and
deepest one in Indiana. Yeah,
but I never did it more than once.
Was it just the is it a heights thing? Heights just make you nervous, or what?
The climbing's kind of hard, and no, the height didn't bother me. Rappelling in is great.
Yeah,
it's getting back out. I worry about the rope. I worry about the descenders hanging onto the rope, and I just worry about stuff climbing out. So I just don't like to do that. I'm not big on that at all.
You seem like the kind of person who just wants to be caving, you know, moving.
I just want to be in the cave.
Moving through the cave, yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas opposed to just going down to the bottom of the pit and climbing right back out. What's the point, right?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a story. I don't know if I ought to tell it, but anyway, I've had three wives.
Okay.
Two wives said, well, we've had about enough of that caving. We're going to quit that.
Okay.
That didn't work.
I guess not.
My third wife, we were in Wayne Cave, about halfway between Camp 1 and Camp 2, sitting on the floor, leaning against the wall, and she said, do I have to do this anymore? And I said, no, you don't. But I do. And if you're going to complain about that, let's just cut this off. We weren't married yet.
Yeah.
Well, 45 years, and she hasn't said a word about it. And she's the keeper.
That's a pretty good run, 45 years. Yeah. My goodness.
Yeah.
So has she gone since then? I mean.
No.
No.
She did not want to do it anymore. She didn't care if I did it.
This was more than 45 years ago.
Yeah.
Went through Wayne. That was it.
Well, no. She went in four or five caves.
Okay.
But Wayne did her in. She didn't want to do that anymore.
That's the did him in cave.
That's why we were sitting there leaning against the wall. She couldn't go any further. She said,
"Well, and knowing that you got to go out back out through that crawlway for a first timer in Wayne Cave is just, you know, that's a real morale killer."
She wanted to just sit there, and I said, "Now wait a minute. You can't do that. We have to get out of here." But that was it. She didn't want to do it anymore.
Would you say that the vast majority of your caving life took place in Indiana then?
Well,
I know you. I know you've been elsewhere, but
I've been caving in the Soviet Union.
Okay,
not very many people have done that.
I guess not. Let's talk about that.
We had we met some cavers somehow from there, and they came over here for 3 weeks and traveled around, and I hosted them on part of that, and then we took a return visit, and we went back, and four of us went back. At the time, I was executive vice president of the NSS, so I was a leader.
Okay.
Had to be the leader. And we went to, so, and it was the Soviet Union. It wasn't broken up yet. And
so this is in what would today be, do you know what country?
We spent most of our time in Ukraine.
Ukraine. Gotcha.
Yeah. But we flew to Moscow, met Alexander Klimchuk, my very best friend over there.
Mm.
I haven't seen him for quite a while now, but Alexander Klimchuk is probably the smartest man I've ever met. He's fluent in several different languages. He spoke very good English. Anyway, he got us an invitation from the Soviet Academy of Science. So he had it was in Russian, of course, but I'd had it translated and I knew what it said. It invited us to come and visit the caves in the Soviet Union. And I didn't even have to have a inter-East guide like everybody does when they went there. I had that piece of paper, and I gave that piece of paper to the guy at immigration. And
that was all they needed to see.
Yeah, and we had to wait. We had to go over and sit down in a chair along the wall. But I could look through the windows, and I could see Klimchuk out there waiting. So I knew he's out there. All I have to do is get through the door. And when all of the people on the airplane had gone through and they've all been examined and all that stuff, then they said, okay, you guys can go. And we just walked out the door, got in Klimchuk's car and drove away. And that was really cool.
Yeah. Well, what'd you get to see there? Do you remember the name of the cave or what it had?
I got to see Optimistiskaya, which is the longest cave in the Soviet Union, second longest cave in the world.
Wow.
And I'll tell you what, when those guys got in a cave, they cut loose. Nobody was watching them anymore.
Yeah.
So they had a good time in the cave. And we were in that cave all day long looking around.
What happened in that cave? Stay in that cave or can you share anything?
Oh, no, nothing happened. We just went caving.
Yeah, yeah,
it was
just
a big cave.
It was a big cave, and they just cut loose.
Yeah.
That's great.
They they'd tell stories, and they'd sing, and they'd, nobody was paying any attention to them.
Was that neat to see as an American, to see someone who at that point knew that they weren't being watched or anything like that? And so
I realized, that they had a different problem than we have.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And there was one guy, he kept talking about the United States and talking about the United States. And I said, well, we've got problems too. They're different problems. He said, oh, don't tell me about that. He said, that's not a goal. It's a dream, not a goal. He said, I'm not going. So that was kind of a good attitude.
How interesting.
And we had... I'm not good with languages. I'm interested in languages, but I don't pick them up. I have to study them and learn them.
Right.
And we had a fancy dinner at a place Klimchuk had set up for us. And since I was the group leader, I had to make speech. And, when we sat down at this table, it was all the Soviet cavers were there and all the American cavers were there. And you sit down at the table and we get the table set. The water glass, that wasn't water.
Vodka.
That was vodka. And they kept filling it up from a pitcher like they do the water.
The USSR's finest.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, and I don't drink.
But you did that night.
I did. And so then Klimchuk said, okay, you got to make a speech. And I got up and I started in Russian. And he said, speak English. I will translate.
Like, it's too slow.
So, but I, I gave a pretty good speech. We're not even thinking about it. I didn't even expect to have to do that. But boy, that was an interesting party.
Man.
Yeah.
A U.S. representative caver.
Yes.
In the midst.
And he had they got a bus somewhere, and there were a bunch of Soviet cavers that going along, Ukrainian mm-hmm. cavers.
Yeah.
In the bus with us, and Klimchak was, of course, in charge of everything. And I had a phrase book that translated Russian phrases, English phrases into Russian phrases.
Sure.
And a couple of the girls wanted to see that book, so I gave them the book. And, of course, they were using it backwards. And they were sitting there, and they said, from reading the book, they said, "Leave me alone," in English. See? And Klimchak jumps up. "What's happening?" "No, no." He said, "Oh, there, you're reading your book." Okay. Because they were trying to say the English, you know, backwards from the Russian. That was an interesting trip. We came to a place where the road was out. The bridge over the river was out. And there was an officer there, and he said we couldn't go down because you have Americans, and it's a military bridge, pontoon bridge that we put across to replace the bridge that's out, and you can't take the Americans down there. And Klimchak said, blah, blah, and the guy said, blah, blah, blah. And he said, "It'll take us 2.5 hours to take the detour. We're not going to do that." He drove down the road a little ways back. He saw a farmer. He stopped. He talked to the farmer. He pulled off in the bus. Now, this is a bus. Pulled off into the field, took a dirt road through the field, came to another road. He got out, ran up there, and looked both ways on the road. "Come on." We went down to the bottom of the hill where the bridge was, pontoon bridge was. And there's another guard down there. And he comes up. "You can't go across it." He says, "Oh, yes, we can. The guy up there said we could." They didn't have radios. They couldn't communicate from the top to the bottom. So Klim's like, "Oh, the guy up there said we could go." So, okay, go. And we got on the bridge, driving across this bridge. And Klimchak said, "Keep your cameras below the windows."
God.
And
you were with somebody who knew how to get through these
situations.
Listen,
he knew how to do everything. He knew how things worked.
Oh, wow.
And like I said, I think he's probably the most intelligent man I've ever met. But anyway, when we got across the pontoon bridge and we were back on the highway again, he came back to the back of the bus, jiggering through his luggage. He got his stomach pills and took care of them. So, he got by with that.
Wow.
So, and then end run around the police in the Soviet Union.
Was that tense?
Not for me.
Not for you?
It was for Klimchak.
Right. Well, so let's talk about the caving that you did there then. You went through the longest cave there.
Optimistic Cave, Optimisticskaya. That's the longest cave. That's kind of like saying, yeah, I've been in Mammoth Cave.
Right.
You know, we saw quite a bit of it. And those guys had fixed up a place in there. I don't know whether I've still got a picture of it. They had a dining room table all set up. I mean, it was all made out of mud and columns. They'd fixed up a room to eat in. And they'd clean it. It was, you know, they'd spent hours and hours and hours doing that, I can tell. It was so neat. But, and then we went some other, you know, down some long passageways. And now that cave was all gypsum. It was not limestone.
Interesting.
And it was all crystals.
Oh, wow.
And there was one big crystal in a sort of a hollow place in the ceiling. There was one crystal that was as big as a Volkswagen car.
Oh, my word.
Gypsum crystal.
Just so it was hanging vertically down, or
it was just in there.
It was
just a lump of stuff in this hollow place.
And so geologically, that tells you that at one point that was just a completely flooded area. And,
probably, yeah. I think maybe most caves are actually.
Yeah.
When they get started,
mm-hmm. Are any parts of that cave like commercialized?
No.
As it were, no.
No.
So it's all just. Belongs to the cavers, essentially, as far as visitation.
Yes.
Wow.
And those cavers had a camp in the Crimean. And there was a cave there, and it was a commercial cave. Mm. The upper level of the cave was a commercial cave. The lower level of the cave was their playground. And they owned it as much as you could own anything in the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what's happened to it.
Huh.
I mean, Russia took over the Ukraine.
Yeah, they did, and Crimea particularly.
The Crimeans in the Ukraine.
Yeah.
Or not in the Ukraine, in the Crimea, the Crimean Peninsula.
Yeah.
The Russians wanted that. It used to be part of Russia, and Stalin gave it to the Ukrainians, and they wanted it back, and they took it back.
Yeah, this is recent news, yeah.
Yeah, and so I have no idea what the Ukrainian cavers have done about their camp, because we spent a couple of 3 days there at their camp.
Mm.
And, I remember there was a whole pile of telephone poles over there at the side. And while we were there, the army came and were trying to load those poles. And you know, when you pick up a pole, you got to pick it up with two ropes.
Right.
Well, they were picking it up with one rope. And we were just sitting there in camp just watching these guys fight with those poles. And Klimchuk says, "Soviet Army, you've got nothing to worry about."
Well, all right. That's one perspective.
Yeah.
Well, let's come back stateside. Mm-hmm. Have you found any significant caves that you can recall? Ridge walking, or found more cave in a cave that was already known?
You know, I've done so many things. I don't think so.
No?
I can't think of nothing spectacular.
So you're just
anyway.
So you're a caver who just likes to go cave.
I'm just like to be in the cave. Yeah. I just like to be in there.
I think I'm with you. I'm the same.
I don't have to do something special. I just want to be in the darn cave. But I got really involved in the NSS. Like we already said, I've been every office. I was on the board of directors of the NSS for 26 years.
Wow.
I was
goodness.
At a convention. George Moore was the president, and somebody who was a director of the NSS got elected an officer. And they had a space had a vacancy on the board. And for some reason, George Moore nominated me for that.
Was that your first sort of foray into the NSS leadership?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He nominated for that, and I happily took it. Then I just kept running for – I either ran for some office or ran for a board, and I was a member of that board for 26 years.
Wow.
And so I got to know the NSS pretty well.
So what was it that made you decide to just – try every position, stay on the board that long? Was it just, this is my thing and I'm going to go full bore through it?
Exactly. This is my thing and I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And when I realized that, I had been several officers. I'd been elected, there were three vice presidents. I got elected administrative vice president, I think, first. Then another one, and I thought, well, hell, I think I'll just try to do all of these. and I did.
What was the elected position you served for the shortest amount of time, and what was the one you served for the longest amount of time?
Most of them were 3 years, because okay, so that was years. What you were – they were one-year terms, but you were expected to do 3 years.
Okay, gotcha.
So I did 3 years. I've done operations vice president twice.
And
two,
that's
2 3-year terms.
A current CIG member is currently the OVP right now, right, Dave Hahn?
I think he is. Yes.
I think he is. Yeah.
Yes.
When you were there in your various positions, what were some of the issues that you were dealing with then that perhaps we're still dealing with now, or that you found solutions for that perhaps the knowledge of that could help the NSS today?
Well, there was another organization that kind of wanted to compete with the NSS, and I don't remember what it was called.
Well, it's probably barely worth mentioning at this point.
I think they've disappeared.
Yeah, but obviously the NSS won out.
That when I was president, that was kind of in the forefront.
What was it? That. What was their angle? What did they claim to have that the NSS that they claimed the NSS didn't?
Another leader.
Is that it?
Yeah, just somebody else wanted to be the boss.
Okay.
You know, one thing that about the NSS, when I was president, there were 12,000 members. There's about 8,000 members now.
Yeah.
And my opinion has always been, for a long time, they give away every reason to be a member, they give it away.
Okay.
And I've argued that and argued that and argued that, and I never could win. You don't have to be an NSS member to win the medal in the photo salon.
Really? Okay.
A non-member can win the medal in the photo salon.
Hmm.
That's about the biggest honor you can win for your work,
mm-hmm.
is that photo salon. And they wanted it to be a nationwide photo salon. They didn't want to force people to be members. You can go to the convention. You can do everything in the convention that's happening and not be a member of the NSS.
You have to pay more.
I believe you do, $20 or $40 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Australia to go to their convention,
mm-hmm.
and I had to join before I could even register for the convention. So I was a member of the Australasian Cave and Karst Management Association for 12 years because I liked to go to Australia, and every time I could get a fairly decent price on an airline ticket, I'd go back.
Huh.
And I like those people. I like that country. It was sort of like being in a parallel universe.
Yeah.
Because it's strangely familiar, but every plant and every animal you never saw before. And the sun was in the wrong part of the sky.
That's right.
I was totally lost the whole time.
When was the last time you were back down there?
Oh, a long time ago.
Yeah.
I don't remember, but a long time ago.
When was that 12 years up that you remember?
80s and 90s.
Okay, gotcha.
The airplane got pretty expensive after a while.
Well, and it's such a long trip. It's 14 hours, you know.
That's the thing I didn't want to do. When you went to Australia, you lost a day.
Yeah.
You'd leave San Francisco on Friday, and you'd get there on Sunday, and you never had a Saturday. On the way home, the airplane left Sydney at like 9 o'clock in the morning on Friday, and you got to San Francisco or Los Angeles at 10 o'clock in the morning on Friday.
A 1 hour trip.
12 hour trip.
Yeah.
But you just lost a day, and then you got a really long day on the way back.
So you're away from NSS leadership now. You come to CIG meetings, of which I'm very thankful to see you there at our meetings. And I'm sure you still read the NSS news. And
I do. Yes, I do.
And things like that. Is there anything that the NSS is doing that you read with particular fondness? And you think, oh, that's good that they're doing that. Or is there anything that you read that you're concerned about?
No, not. I don't want to be president anymore. I'm perfectly happy to let the people that are doing it do it.
You put your time in. I get it. Yeah.
I did it. I did my part. And I still give them some money every once in a while.
Sure.
And I still keep track of what they're doing. But they're not really doing anything that's upsetting. You know, they bought that building.
Yeah.
That was a big investment and a big chance they took to buy that. And I think it's going to work out.
I think so, too.
I think it's going to work out. But because a couple of people have died and left lots and lots of money to pay for that building.
Sure.
They paid about $1.8 or $1.9 million mm-hmm. for that building. But, boy, is that a building.
Boy, can they use it, though? I mean, they can make money with it.
They do make money with it, yes. They rent out. They've got the biggest meeting hall without pillars in it in Huntsville.
Oh, is that right?
It's the biggest one. And people always want to come there and have a meeting because there's a stage.
Yeah.
And then there's a big room, and there's no pillars in the room, so you're not sitting behind the pillars. The building is built like a bridge. You built the walls, you built the top, and then you put rooms in there.
Okay.
So
it's useful.
It's rented out almost every week.
any number of things, I'm sure, wedding receptions and things like
that. Oh, yeah. And it's not cheap. It's like $1,000 for the day. You know?
As it should be, yeah.
But they rent it out all the time.
So that's a big thing. That's a big thing that they've done.
There's a campground on the property mm-hmm. with two picnic shelters. One of them has a kitchen in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really a good place.
Yeah. Well, and there's caves on the property, too.
They're small caves, yes, yeah. But there's 30 caves within walking distance, though. You know, there's a lot of caves in Huntsville.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Hard to go anywhere and not find any down there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of gotten out of touch with the NSS because, you know, I'm not caving anymore. My legs don't work as well as I would like for them to. I think that's probably from 60 years of caving with no knee pads.
Oh, ooh, goodness. Really?
Yeah. I hated knee pads.
Oh, really?
So I never wore them.
And, I just can't imagine.
So I'm a little crippled. I'm walking slow. And I'd hate to get in the cave and not be able to get out. That would be really embarrassing for me to have to be carried out of a cave.
I think you'd make it.
I would tough it out. I can go a mile with sticks, you know, in the park.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know that I could cave and get by with it.
Well, when was the last time you went what you would consider caving?
Well, 3 or 4 years ago, went to Sullivan. And
classic.
I got as far as the second dome in the backbreaker.
Oh, yeah.
And sat down and couldn't get back up again. Decided, hell, and went out.
That was it.
That was pretty much it. Yeah. Then I did some smaller caves, but the big ones that all day long,
yeah,
you know, didn't do those anymore.
Well, you did a trip in Sullivan back in the 60s that I read about, going through the CIG newsletter archives. And you did another one of these in, well, you did two or three of these, I think I remember you saying, where you went to a certain point, turned off all your lights, you and the group, and then felt your way out.
I did that once.
You did that once. You did that in Sullivan.
I did that in Sullivan.
Yeah, and you wrote about it because I think it was your trip report.
Yeah. Bill Tozer instigated that, and he and some other cavers did it in another cave. No, I didn't do that in Sullivan.
Mm.
I did that in Buckner.
Oh, okay.
They did it in Sullivan.
Gotcha.
And I heard about them, and I said, I want to do that. So we did it in Buckner.
Okay.
And, you know, in Buckner, you do a circle route.
Yeah.
So we went in and did the circle route to the left, all the way around, came back about to the place they call the volcano room.
Right.
Then we turned off our lights and found the way out. We hadn't been there today. And it only took us half an hour longer than it would have taken us with light.
Really? Did you pop up into the volcano room, or you got to where you could turn to get to the volcano room?
Well, we have to kind of crawl through the bottom of it. You know?
Right, right, yeah.
And we just crawled through the bottom of it. We had already decided we were going to turn off our lights then and try to get out. So, but we hadn't been to that part of the cave that day.
That's the tightest part of the circle route, and you did that without light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can sit here and close my eyes and do that trip now.
Really?
I know that cave well enough that I can visualize all of it.
That must be fun.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate to ask the favorite thing, but do you have a favorite sections of Buckner Cave that you can think of and you can just kind of remember they're the back of your hand?
Oh, no.
Just
I can remember the whole cave.
Yeah? The whole thing?
I've been through there a lot of times. Yeah, I can remember Buckner Cave. I can sit here and close my eyes and do Buckner Cave from the entrance all the way around and the rest back out again.
So how often then did you do Buckner? I mean, Buckner is a caver's cave. It's a fun cave to just do, and it seems like you're a caver who just likes to cave, and so you were in there a lot.
Yeah, I was in there a lot. Yeah.
Hung out at the barn and all that?
Yeah. I took my scouts there. And we were sleeping in the barn.
Yeah.
And Blends had fixed up a room in the barn with electric heat so that if you were his special friend, you could be warm. But all my scouts were in the upstairs in the barn, and I was in the warm room sleeping. and we're sleeping there.
Captain's quarters.
Yeah, we're sleeping there, and it's the middle of the night, and a deputy sheriff walked in the door, flipped on the light, said, "Is Tom Ray in here?"
Oh, my gosh.
And I didn't say nothing. He said, "Oh, come on." And I said, "Well, what do you want him for?" He said, "His Boy Scouts are stuck in a cave."
Oh, gosh.
They had gotten up and gone down and done a gory hole.
Gory?
And they couldn't get out.
What?
They couldn't get out. They were in there and couldn't get out.
What'd they, like, body rappel or something? What'd they do?
They rappelled in.
Okay.
And one of the guys was able to get out. But the others could not get out. So he came and he called somebody anyway.
So that's a good what, half hour, 45-minute drive from Buckner.
Yeah, it is.
And somebody told them where it was and they just went.
They
and did
knew
it.
Where it was. They just, you know, a couple of them were wise guys and they're just going to go do it. And so I had to get up and get a rescue organized and get some guys down there and pull those guys out of that cave.
What was it, like 3, 4 in the morning, something like that?
Yeah, I don't know what time it was. It was dark. But when that cop came in and flipped on the light, he said, "And is this Tom Ray in here?" I said, "Oh, hell, what the hell have I done now?" You know?
Gosh, you said that night. I mean, Buckner had so many rescues over so many years, I thought maybe they just left and went through the cave and got lost or stuck or something.
They went to Gory Hole.
They went to Gory.
And rappelled in there and then could not get out. Well, one of them, like I said, one of them could get out and go for and went for help.
Did they have the right kind of gear or did they not have the right kind of gear? They were just woefully unprepared.
They had Prusiks. They could
okay,
have,
so they could have gotten
they
out.
They could have gotten out if they'd been real cavers.
They didn't know how to use what they had? Is
they,
that what it might have been?
They didn't have enough strength to, know, that's 154 feet or something like that. It was too much. They did 30-foot climbs. They didn't do anything like that.
They got too big for their britches.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Any other caves like that that you just remember, like the back of your hand, like Buckner?
Yeah. Sullivan. I've seen about all of it. You know, there's 7 miles in Sullivan. I think I've seen all of that.
Been all the way to the back?
I've been, yeah. Well, I've been to the rise one time.
Mm-hmm.
It was me and Art Davis and Pat Humphrey. You don't know Art Davis and Pat Humphrey because Pat Humphrey's moved to Florida and Art Davis has passed away.
Yeah, but I know those names.
The three of us decided we were going to go to the end of the cave on New Year's Day. And we went down there and we set up a great big fire right there by the entrances. We said when we come out of the cave, we just light this fire and we get warm when we change our clothes. And we went in there and we went all the way to the end of the cave.
How long did it take you?
Oh, hours. I don't know, hours.
And it took us, I think we were just shy of 11 hours.
On the way out, there's a place where the ceiling just comes straight down. It's the ceiling's about 8 feet high, and it just comes straight down and then in, and it's 4 feet high. And it's back in the beyond part.
Yeah.
Pat Humphrey's walking along, and she ran into that wall, and she just stopped. And she went to sleep leaning on that wall.
On the way out?
Yeah.
That feels like
she's
like...
just, we caught up with her, and she's just standing asleep leaning on that wall. She couldn't bend down.
I can relate.
Oh, God.
That's a hell of a trip.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And there were just the three of us. And I don't know that even if anybody knew where we were. But, yeah, we had an awful time. And then when we got out, we laid our fire.
Right.
There was 4 inches of snow on it.
Of course.
So we said, oh, hell with it.
What'd you do, get in the cars and warm them up or
no,
what?
We just changed clothes.
Just, oh, gosh. You know, probably weren't.
We'd been to the end of Sodom. We were whipped. We weren't sure we could drive home. You know, get out and start the engine, get warm.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Did you was this wetsuits or was it just wool or was it?
What are wetsuits?
Exactly. Okay, so at the time, wetsuits was not
it was wool.
Really an option.
Yeah, just warm clothes.
Just wool. Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
I never caved with a wetsuit.
Yeah. It makes things a little easier.
Yeah, well, you have to, you know, they weren't that common in the 60s, 70s.
Boy, that is a heck of a... Do you have any trouble route finding? I know it's kind of just borehole all the way back, but you had Sam's map at
the water
at the
was
time,
coming
or?
Out. The water was coming out. And okay. We followed the water.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'd been starting in that trip before. I knew where the bathtubs were, and I'd been through that before.
Mm-hmm.
So we got up into the main stream part of it.
Yeah.
And had been there before.
Yeah.
So and then we just kept following the water. Yep, that was fun.
It's a good trip.
That was fun. I went to Europe one time. They have an international meeting every so often, and you know I'm not a big international traveler, but I decided there it was in Switzerland, and I decided I wanted to see Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
So I went I went to that, and I went with Paul and Lee Stevens and a couple of other people. There were four or five of us that went together. And we flew on Iceland Air because Iceland Air gave us a 2-day layover in Reykjavik if we'd fly on Iceland Air. So we got that layover for nothing.
Nice. And spend some time in Reykjavik.
So I got to see Iceland.
Yeah.
And then we got to Switzerland. And I'll tell you what, you think we've got a high standard of living? Look at Switzerland.
Yeah.
They don't allow you to have a beat-up car in Switzerland. If you've got a beat-up car, or if your car doesn't look good, you can't get a license plate for it.
Oh, I wouldn't do very well there.
Oh, no. And we needed to clean our clothes.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, right.
We couldn't find a laundromat. We had to drive to another town to find a laundromat.
Oh, no.
We were staying in a person's home that they had gone off on vacation and rented out their home to the cavers. But their laundry machine, I had never seen it before, and the instructions were all in French. So I'm not touching that.
No. We could ruin this thing with caving clothes.
Let's go find a laundromat. Well, there wasn't one in that town. We had to go to another town, and we finally found a laundromat. Got our clothes washed.
Worked out okay. Didn't get any sideways views from anybody, because that's what I get. You got to distract the person at the laundromat, make sure they don't see your caving clothes in there.
Oh, no. It wasn't necessarily caving clothes. It was
just you know, whatever.
It was 2 weeks. You got to wash your clothes.
That's true, yeah.
I had to wash my underwear, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't necessarily doing. We just didn't wash the caving clothes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah,
I thought it was neat when I came back from the Soviet Union and came back to the United States. I had three bags. I had a backpack on my back and two duffel bags.
Yeah.
And one duffel bag was caving clothes that had not been washed for 2 weeks. And the last cave trip we were on was like neck deep. So here's this bag, this reeking, you know, green fumes are coming. And I wanted that guy, that customs guy, to open that bag.
That'll teach him.
I had my form in my pocket.
Passport?
The immigration form.
Oh, okay,
gotcha.
Where
you list all the stuff.
Visa and whatnot.
Yeah, and I'm walking along with these bags and this backpack, and I'm walking along, and I wanted somebody to stop me and look in that bag. And some guy reached out and took that form out of my pocket, and he didn't say anything, so I just kept walking. And I walked through a door, and I was out in the lobby of the, you know, I was out in the lobby. I'd gone through immigration. They hadn't even looked at me.
That was it.
Yep, that was it.
Ah, didn't even get your...
I've had three bags. I'd been to the Soviet Union, and they didn't even look at me. And I've just never had any trouble with immigration.
If they had looked, they would have maybe thought you were a bioterrorist or something.
I don't know what the hell they would have thought. If they'd opened that one duffel bag, green fumes would have come out.
Somebody would have collapsed.
Oh,
it would have been a whole international incident.
We one time when we went to Australia with Paul and Lee Stevens, we came back and we're going through immigration, and the guy, I was first, I was lying, and the guy says, "How much money have you got?" I said, "I've got 300 American, 200 Australian." He said, "Okay, walk on through. And Paul Stevens was next, and he said, give me your wallet. And he took his wallet apart with everything in it. He didn't do that to me.
Random search.
I've never had any trouble with Canada. I go to Canada quite often, being up in the Upper Peninsula.
Sure.
And I just go through immigration. And they, you know, they say, now don't make any wisecrack remarks to those guys, you know. Well, I'm kind of a wise guy in a way. One time the guy said, did you buy anything in Canada? And I said, nothing I didn't eat. And he just laughed and said, go on. I don't have trouble with those people. But other people have all kinds of trouble. I don't know what it is.
Well, I don't know either.
Yeah. You come back from the Soviet Union with three bags of dirty stuff and they don't even look at it.
Something tells me that it'd be a little different these days if that were the case. Everybody's getting looked at sideways, up and down.
It may be. I don't know. Mm. This was some time ago. I'm not going to do it anymore.
Well, let's talk about, I don't know how far we can go with this, but let's talk about publishing and you've published a lot of books and a lot of them had to do with caving and caves.
Practically all of them had to do with caves and caving. Larry Matthews wrote a lot of them. Mm. Larry Matthews is a writing fool. He writes and I do his caves, do his books. In my library, there's 3 feet of books that I published. There's a lot of books, convention guidebooks and caving books, Larry Matthews books.
Yeah. You published and printed the 91, you edited that one, the 91 convention that was in Indiana. Did you also publish and print the 2007 guidebook as well that was also in Indiana?
I did. I also did the Michigan guidebooks.
Okay.
And I did a Texas guidebook.
So how'd you get into that? Did you yourself do the printing? Did you have a shop?
Oh, no. I have a printer that I work with. I used to have 4 of them, and I've boiled it down to 1 that I work with them pretty well. So I have a printer. I don't do printing.
Do layout.
I have the layout on a DVD, and all they do is just run the DVD through their printing press.
Gotcha.
They don't make any change to it at all. And I'm a pretty good editor.
And you've just done that with a number of books that you can probably still get at the NSS bookstore, right?
A lot of them you can, yes.
Yeah.
I started printing them in China. Hmm. It really hurts me to do that.
Yeah.
But the last book I did was Larry Matthews, one of Larry Matthews' books. It's 361 pages. It's got 179 color pictures in it. And I printed 1,000 of those in China for $7.50 a piece.
Wow.
$7.50 a piece.
Wow.
If I had printed that in Michigan, where I usually got my books printed, it would have been about $60.
Oh, my goodness. A piece?
Yep.
Wow.
They would have, NSS would have had to sell that book for $100 if I'd printed it in Michigan. And
wow.
They're selling it for $25.
Wow.
It's a 361-page book for $20. Hardbound.
Hardbound.
Full color. And they're selling it for $25.
Wow.
Because I printed it in China. You just can't, I just can't not do that.
Well, yeah. Anything else you can think of?
Nope, I guess not. I'll think of a million things.
Oh, I'm sure you will.
On the way home.
Yeah.
I'll have to send you an email and say, add this and this and this. I've done so many things, you know. There for a long time, I went caving every other weekend.
Every other weekend. Yeah.
Every other weekend, I was off caving somewhere.
Did you hit up a lot of the same places? I mean, you went to Buckner a lot.
Sure.
Went to Sullivan a lot.
I went where my friends wanted to go.
So you had a core group of people you knew you could count on go every other weekend.
I did a lot of caving with Scott Fee.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, he's down in Alabama or somewhere now.
Mm-hmm.
Gone, but we did a lot of caving together. I wasn't into mapping. I didn't do mapping. I went on one mapping trip one time, and I got cold, and I thought, I'm not going to do this anymore. I didn't do any mapping.
Did you get bored? I mean, it's a lot of sitting around holding stations and whatnot, right?
The thing I remember about that trip was I was cold because of sitting.
You got to stop.
Yeah. If you keep moving, you stay warm, and I usually stayed warm.
You just like to move through the cave.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of Indiana caves that I don't even remember. I went to one cave, and somebody said, have you ever been in here before? And, no, I don't think so. And I walked in and said, oh, hell, I've been in here before. I recognized it after I got in there.
You got a cache of carbide still at home?
I have some carbide. I do. I really do.
Yeah?
Yep.
It's hard to come by these days.
Well, the government, in their infinite wisdom, decided it was hazardous material.
Yeah. And it kind of is.
Well, kind of is. But I used to go down to the welding shop and buy a 100-pound barrel of that stuff for $15.
Wow.
I don't know. It's probably $100 now for a barrel like that.
Something like that, yeah. It's got to be close.
But really, caving has been my life.
You still got that Corvette?
No.
No? You sell that thing?
I didn't like that Corvette. I've had four Corvettes.
Really?
Yes, I've had four of them. And that last one I had, I did not like it.
Well, the one that I remember is the gold one. Gold?
No, it was just off white.
Okay. What year was it? Do you remember?
A 91.
Okay. I don't know if that's the one I'm thinking of. That's
the only one you would have seen.
Is it? Okay.
Because there was an airplane that interfered with my Corvette buying.
Yeah? It's the only one I would have seen? I seem to remember one, it seemed like a 60s or 70s era one that you tried to sell at the CIG garage sale in like 2012 or 13 or something. But I could be wrong.
Oh, that was the white one that was my last one.
Okay, so that was from 90s.
Yeah, I wasn't really trying to sell it. I was being a smart ass.
Right, right. I figured as much, but.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was my last one.
Okay, but you got an airplane.
I had an airplane.
You had an airplane.
I've had four airplanes, actually. My dad hates airplanes.
Okay.
Hates them.
Yeah.
For some reason. He had to fly on them when he worked, but he didn't want to do it. So when I was at Purdue, one of my fraternity brothers, actually a pledge brother, was Neil Armstrong.
No kidding.
And
no kidding.
Of course, he wasn't the Neil Armstrong you know now.
Of course, but still. But
it was Neil Armstrong.
It was Neil Armstrong.
He was a pledge brother. And he would have taught me to fly.
No kidding.
And I could have rented a Piper Cub at the airport at Purdue for $5 an hour. But the way my dad felt about airplanes, I just didn't feel like I could spend his money doing that.
Yeah, okay.
And I really wish I had.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Neil, he could fly anything upside down or right side up.
Clearly.
And I would have loved to have him teach me how to fly. And he offered to do it. He said, I'll teach you how to fly. I said, I just can't spend my dad's money for that. He hates airplanes so much.
How much time do you spend with him?
With Neil?
Yeah.
Well, I lived with him for 3 years. So, yeah, a lot of time.
Wow. That's cool.
But, you know, he was in the Navy. He was older than I was.
Purdue Aviation Program,
but he
yes.
was a freshman. I was a freshman. You know, we were just there.
Yeah.
We were in the same fraternity and same joined at the same time. So we were brothers.
That's cool.
Yeah.